Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
And it's October now. October. There must be another international break coming up soon. There must be. Please say there is one, Terry.
No, it is. Relax. We've got one more week of tedious club football getting in the way of the international break. And then it's international football again. So it's all good. Breathe a sigh of relief.
Well, that's a relief. Well, I suppose there's a round of European football as well, isn't there, to sink our teeth into as well. In fact, in the next few days, we've got European football, league football, and then more international football. It's a wonderful time of the season, isn't it, Jan?
Yeah, before we break for the international games, there is a hell of a lot of football going on this week. So they're going to be very, very tired, those players. Very tired.
Very tight, very tight. Well, you know, I mean, they get paid enough.
Yeah.
And what happens if they get injured? They get a year off. That's not bad, is it?
Paid as well.
Yeah, paid. It's not as if they're suffering. Yeah, all right. Oh, I've got to pay so many times. Boo-hoo. Don't be so good then. Be rubbish. No, get plenty of rest then.
Stop being so good at the football, Rodri.
Exactly. If he wasn't so good, then like, Pep wouldn't pick him all the time, would he? I mean, it just stands to reason. It's just common sense.
Common sense, mate. It's common sense.
That's what we need more of, isn't it? We need more common sense.
Yeah.
I've done my own research and I've found we need more common sense.
But, of course, even though it's only just the beginning of October, there are some, maybe you are one listener, who's sitting there thinking, well, all right, you may be looking forward to things coming up between now and Christmas and now and the end of the season, but quite frankly, at the moment, my whole season now is really resting on my club actually having a little run in the FA Cup, and that's it now. That's not a way to be at the beginning of October, is it? I mean, you've still got to have that early season optimism, surely, surely.
I reckon that it's around now that it starts to then dawn on you. You're thinking, yeah, mate, it's just going to be one of those seasons rather than one of those seasons. And, you know, I think I'm at that point where, you know, I think certainly you should be paving the way. You should be mentally, emotionally preparing yourself for the fact that it's going to be one of those seasons. And, you know, I personally am preparing myself for that. You know, I want to make certain that I'm emotionally stable enough to be able to manage the crushing disappointment of it being another one of those seasons. But I've not given up hope yet, though, Graham.
Well, we'll talk about Palace in a moment.
If we must.
Well, we will. Jan, Sunderland are not doing too bad in the Championship at the moment, but of course it's the Championship, so form is fleeting, isn't it? So are you at a point now where you're thinking, yes, our season is defined. It's going to be one of these seasons.
Yes, I feel it has been defined. I think that Sunderland are going to be competing at the top of the table. Which, looking at the Championship currently, it couldn't be any more Championship because the top seven teams are separated by 3 points. And that's how it's going to be all season because it's just the best league there is. I think Sunderland are going to have a pretty good season, good start. Unfortunate against Watford at the weekend, who are a good side, and it seemed like a fairly even game. But, it was encouraging to see a player that we've got on loan from Zenit St. Petersburg, Wilson Isidore, who's a French national. He got his first start and he got a goal as well. So we seem to have solved our striker problem, not just in that game, but across the start of this season. So I think Sunderland's going to have a pretty good season and I'm feeling pretty confident about the whole thing.
Well, my club, Arsenal, had almost had a slip-up against Leicester at the weekend, leading 2-0, then throwing that away and coming back to win deep into injury time to take all the points. But that hasn't stopped bookmakers making them favourites, yes, favourites, for the title. That's the sort of season that people who generally know about these sort of things anticipate for Arsenal. Ooh, that's a bit scary. But yeah, I must admit, I'm sort of ready for the roller coaster ride of a push for the title and what that's going to be. And actually, I think they probably are in a better place than they were last season. So I'm looking forward to that. But Terry, lots and lots of optimism for Palace, wasn't there, at the beginning of the season? A hell of a lot of optimism. I thought they did really well in the transfer market. That just seemed to go all the way through August. They were just picking up players and they were keeping players and it all looked good. And the way they ended up last season was fantastic. But is it one of those seasons for you?
It could be. I mean, I'm not quite ready to throw in the towel just yet. It's been a crushingly disappointing start to the season, but only after this most recent game. You know, when we lost to Brentford, for example, with all early days, season, okay, it's one result, that's bad. But and then the 2 points against Chelsea and United, you're thinking, well, you know, Chelsea, well, quite a good side. And United can be quite a good side, and we've got points against them. And you can look at it and say it's not been the most straightforward start for Crystal Palace. And we have made headway in the AFL Cup, which is not something that we usually do. And I do quite like that. So that's quite encouraging. But then losing to Everton, especially when you're going a goal up, that just doesn't feel like any grounds for optimism whatsoever. And I do feel quite discouraged by that. I didn't see the game, but my understanding is that they were poor. And some of those signings, I just think they haven't quite gelled. I think we were all expecting Kamada to be proper good, and he's not really finding his way yet. In fairness, there's been some injury problems in the back line that has caused a lack of consistency. So we have Gehi, obviously, great player. We've got Lacroix in, who's a very good player. But we've had Chadley in and out. We've had Chris Richards in and out. We've had Gehi in and out. And I think that this is causing some problems there, which may be resolved over time. And I'm encouraged by the underlying stats. The XG puts us mid-table. The XGA puts us slightly also mid-table. But XG lower mid-table. XGA upper mid-table. Certainly a lot better than Manchester United, put it that way. So I don't think that it's quite as bad as it looks. And so I'm not too discouraged, but I am discouraged. I'm just not too discouraged.
I've not seen Palace play this season for a full game. They're going to be playing Liverpool this weekend?
Yeah.
Yeah, at Selhurst Park, isn't it?
Not a chance. No, no. This all has to start after the international break.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a free hit the next game.
Well, is it though? Is it? I mean, if they get tonked at home 4-0.
Yeah, then it might be time to panic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this the worst international break for that panic to set in? Not the one immediately after the transfer window, but the one when clubs think, yeah, we really should have sacked him the last international break.
I think for coaches, yeah, this is the one where you go, because yeah, you're right. In a lot of cases, the first international break is literally like 2 weeks after the start of the season in a lot of leagues, maybe three in some leagues, but in a lot of cases, it's 2 weeks. Even the most trigger happy chairman are going to consider that to be too soon. It's this one that's the problem. But what I reckon tends to happen is that if you have a bad start to the season for the first international break, you're kind of either told or it's strongly implied that you're on notice. And if we're still this bad, the second international break, then, you know, we'll be looking for a new coach during the break. I don't think that applies to Glasner. I think that they've invested in Glasner. I think they believe strongly in his project, and I think it will be fine. But it is disappointing. I genuinely, and now I feel silly for saying it now, because it's obviously, you know, it was foolish for me to have that level of ambition. But I genuinely felt towards the back end of the season, I thought this is, I know a lot of clubs were in their flip-flops, but I thought if we could build on this, there's a possibility of maybe a top seven, top eight finish, maybe sneak a Conference League place. So I genuinely thought that. And that's not out of the question, but it does seem silly now when you look at where Palace are now and when you look at, you know, the way that when I've seen them, you know, they've just been quite uncoordinated and still almost like they're in pre-season, really. They've not figured it out. So, yeah, it's not pleasant, but I'd be astonished if Glasner was fired.
Well, Jan, being a Sunderland fan, you're probably quite good at sniffing the air when it comes to managers getting sacked.
I've got a sixth sense. I've got a sixth sense. And I think Glasner will be fine. I think he'll be fine at Palace. And I think, as Terry wonderfully summarised there, that, you know, they've brought in players, they've struggled to get a consistent team out there. So that is going to impact things. And they've only played six games. And, you know, they got a result against Chelsea.
against Leicester and against Manchester United. So there's definitely something to build on. And I think Terry's right. As soon as they've got a bit of consistency in there, I think they'll be fine. You don't become a bad team overnight. You just need to gel those new players in and go from there.
I think Crystal Palace as a club and as a concept are capable of becoming a bad team overnight. I've seen it happen.
I just think with the way that they are now, Terry, with their current setup, yeah. It just feels like it's a really solid foundation. And I think that you're right. you know, Palace have got it in them to push the button, haven't they, as Sunderland have as well. But I think Palace feel like they're in a bit of a better position than they've been for a long time, aren't they?
Well, if Palace aren't in such a bad position, what's your sixth sense telling you about Erik ten Hag then?
My phone just buzzed actually with one of the football apps I've got saying, Ten Hag surges ahead in the Premier League sack race, but who else is at risk? So journalists are definitely getting some copy out of this. I think that he's in a difficult situation. I have, and I don't tell anyone this, but I do have friends that support Manchester United. But if we can just keep that between ourselves, and they very much are of the opinion that he needs to go. I did watch the game yesterday while I was making a delicious curry. And that was a great game to watch in that Manchester United were so terrible and Spurs were so cavalier, I think is a good way of describing how they played. But United, by the end of it, just looked beaten. Their fans looked beaten. Even the visiting Spurs fans were saying, is there a fire drill? Which I love a little bit of humour like that. But it kind of just, I suppose, typifies the situation that they found themselves in yesterday afternoon. I think that patience of certainly the small number of fans that I've spoken to, and certainly as I've read today in the press, that it feels like that the knives are out for him. They've been a club in transition for a while, haven't they? But they actually are in transition because of the buyout that happened recently with Ineos. So I think that they'll be keen to put their stamp on the coach's position now. They were close to getting rid of him over the summer, weren't they? You know, there was a meeting to decide whether he was good enough, having just delivered the FA Cup. I think they were looking for an excuse then. They've probably got their reason now. They've got some awful games coming up in Europe and domestically as well. So I think that, you know, if he's still around after the international break, I think that he'll have done well.
Yeah, they've actually only got one home game during October. Well, no, they've got two, but the other one is right at the other end. It's on the 30th of October. So they've got a few weeks without having the pressure of the Old Trafford crowd trying to be happy, being always constantly behind the team, like Gary Neville tells us, even though they're like piling out the exits in droves yesterday. Mind you, it looked proper grim up there yesterday. They were getting tanked by Tottenham at home in the pouring rain. I mean, you could just see it leaving that seat and thinking, right, now I've got to go and stand in that huge queue waiting for the tram in the rain. It looked god-awful there yesterday. Terry, they've got two away games. They've got the game against Porto this week in the Europa League. Now, Europa League, of course, you know, they can afford to just go there and just beat out a one-all draw or something like that. But next weekend, they've got to go to Aston Villa. Aston Villa dropped points at the weekend. So they're looking to get a win because they quite like being in the Champions League places now, Aston Villa. And they look a hell of a lot more likely to finish in the Champions League this season than United do, don't they?
Well, yeah, they've got the better team and they've got the better coach, or at least they've got a better coach for the team that they have. I think Erik ten Hag is a good coach. I just think he's coaching the wrong team. But that is going to be a difficult one. Villa, of course, you'd have to say, stolen Manchester United's thunder, really. I mean, Villa are where I think Man United fans feel at the very least they should be. At the very least they should be. Obviously, they should be much, much higher than that. But in the current situation, yeah, so that's a must-win game, not just simply because points mean prizes in the Premier League, but also because of, I think, of what it means in terms of this is where Villa are. A few years ago, Villa were in the Championship. And now they're in the Champions League. And where are United? They're kind of like nowhere, really. Almost literally nowhere. So, yeah, that is a massively important one. I agree with you. I think the Porto one, they can probably be a little bit more relaxed. In the normal time, you think, okay, well, you'd think a Premier League team, you'd fancy a Premier League team over a Portuguese league team. But Porto are veterans in European competition. They know how to play in these competitions. They're very good at it. They're at home. I don't think anyone would be overly shocked if a good Manchester United side went to Porto and lost. So I don't think anyone would be massively shocked if a bad one goes there and loses. And I believe a bad one will be going there and losing. So I think that that might take a bit of that additional pressure off. But all of this is kind of academic. Do you not think if the decision has actually already been taken and now it's just a question of timing? And that's what I wonder is actually happening.
Well, the big thing on the horizon this month anyway is another Europa League game, and which is their trip to Istanbul to play Fenerbahce. Now, let me scratch my brain. Now, there's something familiar about that Fenerbahce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, keep going.
What is that thing at the back of my head? It's just screaming out at me like, oh my God, this is a ridiculously huge game for Man United. Jan, help me out here. Why is it so big for Man United?
Could it be because the current manager of Fenerbahce is Jose Mourinho?
My word, so it is. So it is, yes. Terry, that's got narrative, hasn't it, that one?
It really does. And those Fenerbahce fans, irrespective of whether of Mourinho, are going to be absolutely there for that game. They are going to be completely there for that game. Manchester United come into their place. Doesn't really matter what the competition is. They are totally going to be there for that. And Mourinho is going to whip up an absolute storm on the touchline. He's going to be at his absolute Europa League final for Roma best. Absolutely. Abusing the referee, abusing the fourth official, abusing himself, possibly. Absolutely. You know, because in fairness, to a degree, this is increasingly what Mourinho really has left, if I'm being honest with you, which is why he's now in the Turkish Superliga and not perhaps in one of the top four leagues. Now, with apologies to the Superliga and to Fenerbahce, fine institutions, fine club. But Mourinho has in the past played in a different playground. But that is going to be an epic game, and I think it's going to be really, really difficult. I think it'll be difficult for a new coach to work through. And I think it's going to be even difficult if it's actually at the fag end of Ten Hag's time there, because presumably at that point, he might well know what's going on. So, of course, it depends. If they turn things around and have a good game at Villa, then, and they've got Brentford as well, haven't they? So they, Brentford, yeah, they can be beaten, but equally they're tough to beat. The way that the apps are indeed buzzing on the phone, with kind of, oh, Ten Hag on the brink and all that stuff, does feel as though we it could all be decided by then. But of course, then at that point, then the question is, well, who is in charge? You know, which will it be, a caretaker manager? Do they have someone lined up? This is the key, and all of that. It's kind of a good job that Moyes left at the end of the season, because the game after that is West Ham United.
Well, of course, Moyes is out of work now, isn't he? And he knows the setup of Manchester United.
Or is he, Jan? Or is he?
Oh, exactly.
Has the call been made?
And someone shoved a microphone in front of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's face at the weekend and asked him what he thought of the position at Manchester United. And I'm paraphrasing here, but I think the inference comes across when he said, well, I wouldn't like to see any fellow manager doing badly, but obviously, if the opportunity came up, I would be more than interested to. Yeah, so it could well be that Jose lines up against Solskjaer or Moyes, both of which would be hilarious.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. I'd like to see them both.
The yes, team. Yes, joint managers.
A Julier Evans style on the touchline.
Definitely. Yeah, only from hell.
That would just be brilliant, wouldn't it?
A grit curbishly. Well, for the kids there, and yeah, Julier Evans, that would be amazing. Oh, love to see that.
Yeah, and listeners, if you can think of any more, then please get in touch somehow. So United are having they are just having a United season, aren't they? Could any Man United fan have really, really thought that this season would go any different?
They have made some decent signings. It's not like they haven't moved in the transfer market. I think that it does look as though they're signing the kind of players that Ten Hag doesn't seem to be able to work with, and which then just makes you wonder whether or not what's happening here is that they're giving Ten Hag the rope with which to hang himself so that they can then let him go, which is cynical. But, you know, we are talking about Ineos and we are talking about Sir Jim Ratcliffe. And he strikes me as being the kind of person who is quite willing to be calculating and cynical. at times and would look bad. If he'd fired Ten Hag after the cup final, he'd look bad for good reason.
Yes.
But maybe it would have been better if he'd been, if this is how I think it's going to go, then maybe it would have been better if he'd been honest and just said, look, you know, congratulations on the win. It's fantastic. Two trophies, two seasons. You've done a brilliant job, but you're not who we're looking for. And we want to make a change. I think that that kind of thing is fine. I don't think there's any face to be lost in saying something like that. It happens in business all the time. And these owners are always banging about how football is a business. So, you know, they should just go ahead and do it. My worry is that the United ownership turn out to be craven. Mm. I don't know where I would get that from, but my worry is that they do turn out to be craven and that they're more interested in kudos and publicity than they are in doing what needs to be done. And I mean, I don't feel sorry for Ten Hag. I don't feel that he's the kind of person who wishes anyone to feel sorry for him. I also think that he'll be in a good place because they'll pay up his contract. He'll go to another club and start winning football matches again because he's a really good coach. It's just, this is Man United and this is your big chance in your career and it looks like he's blown it.
But Jan, what Terry said there, do you think that they are, as Terry says, craven? And do you think that they are just giving him rope with which to hang himself? If so, it's really, really expensive rope, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think rope of that quality, is, you know, it must be spun from angel hair or something like that. Yeah, it's going to cost them a lot to get rid of him. But like as I said earlier, without repeating myself, I think this has been on the agenda for a while. And the fact that he won the cup, I think, just got in the way of that. They have bought in some good players, but they've also let some really good players go. I mean, Scott McTominay was a fine player for them for many a year. He was, and last year was no different either. And of course, you know, Jadon Sancho at Chelsea at the weekend, we saw how good he looked as well and how good he looks everywhere that he's not wearing a Manchester United shirt. So, you know, I mean, that's just two examples of players that actually, you know, if you had Sancho playing in that game, as well as he's been playing for Chelsea this season, then that could have been a completely different game. And he's had his falling out with Sancho as well and other players. So yes, a fine coach who does bring in trophies, but maybe just not the right fit for a club like that. I mean, who would be? I mean, you could send Pep there and he'd probably end up getting chucked out. They've got some internal problems that I don't think have been fixed by the bringing in of Ineos.
Yeah.
Just a quick interjection, if I may. Scott McTominay doing very well at Napoli in the starting 11 and they're top of the league. So,
Jan makes a great point there. Who are they going to bring in? Are they going to be faced with trying to get Vincent Kompany back from Bayern Munich or something like that? I mean, who are they going to get? Maybe that's it. Maybe that's what's happening this season. Maybe we're going to see Russell Martin at Southampton. Which European super club is he going to be managing next season?
This is a guy with a promising career. I mean, but also Kieran McKenna at Ipswich. He was tapped up, wasn't he? I think Russell Martin is definitely on course for what I hope is a glittering career and not in a Brian Potter kind of way. And yes, I meant Brian Potter, okay? I'm deliberately calling him Brian Potter. It's an insult, okay? But Brian Potter has shown that you need to be careful about what your next career move is. Chelsea was the wrong fit and the guy still can't get a job. I'm sure he will at some point. So Russell Martin needs to be really careful. Manchester United need, and I hate to say this, but they need someone to come in who is, you know what they need, Graham? Do you know what they need, Jan? They need a diplomat in a waistcoat.
Oh, don't.
Yeah.
They don't need a coach. They've got the players. They need a coach who understands the rudiments of coaching, but they need someone who has a track record of instilling dressing room harmony in difficult dressing rooms.
This is true. They also need someone who works for an archaic organisation with too many chiefs. Who on earth could have held down a job for so long with so much success in that sort of organisation?
And they would love to have someone, particularly ideally, before we put forward a name, but ideally someone who has excelled and yet no one seems to understand why.
Well, I think if Vincent Kompany has taught us anything, nothing about management of football clubs makes sense anymore, does it? This is 2024 now. It's who knows? Is it stick on then, Gareth Southgate?
I think he's the guy they want. I think that the stories keep coming back. And as someone once said, I said recently on Blue Sky, and I can't remember who it was. I'm sorry, I can't remember who it was. I said, yeah, meanwhile, Gareth Southgate is still out there getting stronger. I think that he might actually be the guy, because I don't think there's anyone else who would want the job who's any good. And I think that the other people who are good are going to be untested, and I'm worried that they're just not going to be able to work their way through that. You're right. It's a morass of unnecessary admin and institutions and silos all within that. They're like the FA. I'm sure in many ways they're not like the FA, but you know, if there is one person who has demonstrated their ability to work through that, then it is Gareth. And if he gets if he has a good coaching team, it won't be, you know, great fun to watch, but it will probably be disciplined. And it will probably be effective. I don't think that they're going to win the league, but I don't think they're going to win the league anyway. So I don't think that Gareth Southgate is as good a coach as his record as England manager suggests that he is. But I don't. Again, I'm not certain Man United need a good coach right now. They need a leader.
This is true, isn't it, Jan? And let's face it. When it comes to coaches who have been reasonable for them, a pretty average Middlesbrough coach seemed to do all right when Ollie got sacked. So why not get another pretty ordinary Middlesbrough coach in?
Yeah, I think that would be career suicide for Southgate to do that. I think that in the world of football, he's held in such high esteem for what he's achieved with England, and he certainly is with me. I can tell you that, because I think England I think you even said it, Graham, the expectation is now that England will go into a tournament and at least get to the semi-finals rather than hoping just to make it to the quarters. And I think that's the legacy of what he created there, going to Manchester United with all of the politics, all of the press attention, and having mad owners and even madder new owners. I think that's an impossible situation for anyone to go into. I agree with everything you've just said about Southgate, Terry. You're absolutely correct in everything you've just asserted, but I don't think that he would do any good there. And that's not because I think he's rubbish. I think he's wonderful and a lovely man. But I think that is just an impossible situation and a poison chalice if there ever was one.
Poison chalice. Well, if you do see Gareth Southgate at Villa Park on Sunday, it's probably not because he's checking out his new team. It's probably because, you know, he had a great career at Aston Villa, isn't it, Terry?
Yeah, he's an ex-player. Yeah, he's an ex-player.
Yeah.
And was a brilliant player for Aston Villa.
He was. And that's going to be why the camera keeps cutting to him in the crowd. Even though he's not manager of England anymore, what's the hell is he doing there? He's turning up as a punter. That will be the only reason he'll be there at Villa Park on Sunday, isn't it, Jan?
Yeah, absolutely. He probably just lives down the road. It's probably his local. He's probably popped out for a pint of milk and a packet of fags and gone, oh, the Villa at home. Might as well just go and see him.
Because that's how it works.
That's exactly how it works.
Yeah, well, and you know, he'll have a great time because Villa will run out easy 3-0 winners, I'm sure of it as well. And yes, Villa Man United, you've guessed it, is going to be in our box set this week. I'm going to be doing the preview of that one. What else have we got there? Well, we've got Inter Milan versus Che Adams Torino. That's going to be on Saturday night. Terry, you've got St. Pauli versus Mainz. St. Pauli got a big win at the weekend, didn't they?
Massive win. Did you look at the stats for that? 27% of possession, St. Pauli. Absolutely ridiculous to win 3-0 with their start of the season with 27% possession. I mean, that's a clinic, mate. They're putting on a clinic, as they say.
Putting on a clinic. Well, if you didn't read last week's box set, Terry gave a very, very good summarisation of the Bundesliga. And you weren't let down if you watched the Bundesliga this weekend, because it was ridiculous. Goals aplenty, wasn't it? A series of ridiculous matches, wasn't it?
Yes, indeed. And for the Bundesliga, it is just a feast of goals. They can't help themselves. They can't defend. They don't know the meaning of the word defend. And I'm all here for it. But my favourite, obviously, is Hoffenheim 3, Werder Bremen 4, which is absolutely, absolutely insane. And it looks like actually the Hoffenheim coach may be paying for that job in a big way. And I don't believe he's in the running for the United job, put it that way. Pellegrino Matarazzo, alas.
Oh, yeah. If you don't know the story of that game, listeners, Hoffenheim was 3-0 up in after 18 minutes.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah,
and they got a player sent off. And then it was 3-3 by half time. It's
yes. The player who scored the hat trick for Werder Bremen was I don't know how you pronounce it. It's S-T-A-G-E, stage in English. I'm sure it's probably Stage, perhaps, but he staged a comeback. Oh. I'll have that finessed by the time we do the Talking Fußball podcast tomorrow.
Sure, okay. Sure, yeah, I'm sure you will. That's almost as good as the writings on the wall for graffiti, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, which is just chef's kisses all over the place. You cannot move for chef's kisses. It's ridiculous. Get back to work, chefs. Cook some food. Stop kissing.
Well, all of that lovely talk about the Bundesliga is that Terry has something else to think about other than Crystal Palace's inevitable home defeat to Liverpool. But well, let's not dwell on that because Terry's going to write the preview of that. Yeah, and you'll be doing Sunderland and Leeds for a bit of Friday night championship madness, won't you?
Yes, yeah, it'd be good. That's
going to be a game.
It's going to be a game. It's also the second time in a week Sunderland are on the telly, which is just bizarre. They're playing Derby tomorrow night as well. So, it's going to be a game. A chance to put things right after the Watford defeats, two back-to-back games at home. So hopefully we'll get points at Derby and points for the game in the box set.
Can I just say, Graham?
Yes.
Authentic football fan Terry says, boo to all of these scheduled championship games being moved around because of the new TV deal. But TV football fan Terry says, yay to all these championship games on the telly.
Championship games, League One games as well. There is so much EFL stuff on the telly. And yes, yeah, we should be, grr, yes, this isn't right. Saturday 3, grr, Saturday 3, grr. But also, yay! Yeah,
it's tough. It's not easy being us.
No, it's not.
It's a fine line we walk.
It is a fine line we walk. And it's also a fine line when you try and say, what are you watching on Saturday night? Well, Barnsley Stockport's on.
Which actually would be quite a game.
Well, it was. It was at the weekend.
Well, so. It was. It was in the box set, wasn't it?
It was indeed. Well, if you want to see what's in this week's box set, though, then get along to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set, and subscribe, and it will be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. Yeah, and it will be there every Friday lunchtime, as long as you don't unsubscribe. That would be a really, really mean thing to do, wouldn't it? But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFillon, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football. Or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
So yeah, that's an interesting week he's got coming up. Then he's got to go to Fenerbahce.
He's got to go to Fenerbahce and get
a result.
I tell you what, I'd love it.
I'd love it.
I'd still fight a dirty title.
I think Solskjaer's going to be manager for that one.
Ollie's at the wheel.
But he said, don't even joke. He said in the press, didn't he? Well, you know, I don't want to wish ill of any manager. He said, but
however.
Oh God, I love that. I love that. Oh, it's a gift that keeps on giving, Man United.